New cybersecurity standards for cloud systems are on the way. The FedRAMP office at the General Services Administration is drafting a new set of rules this month to qualify cloud systems for use with FISMA High specifications. Susie Adams is Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal and watching and writing about the evolution of cloud in government. And Susie's my guest for Industry Chatter today. It's terrific to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
What are the things about cloud in particular, but just trends in general, that folks in the government that you talk to are asking you about right now, Susie? Thanks for coming in.
I think really just... In cloud in general, I think it's cloud and mobile as a bigger topic and an integrated topic. And I think what we're seeing is that, you know, from a mobility perspective, and I'll talk about mobility first, from a mobility perspective, it's no longer really about the actual phones that you're using, right? Phones, new phones come out every other day. It seems like it's like I want the next new phone, you know, in 6 months from now. And what we're seeing is it's really all about the application. Right, and the application that's running on that phone. And we're seeing that what people are really trying to do is make sure that these applications that they're building can run on any phone, on any device, and be used, right, on any operating system. And I think that's a pretty big fundamental shift. And those apps are being powered by the cloud, which means really the clouds now have to be open enough to support any operating system, any developer, right, any programming language that's out there, and be in any operating system as well, to be able to power those mobile apps.
What does that mean for the cloud infrastructure, though? What do the providers like you and your competitors have to do to enable that?
Well, from a platform perspective, it means we really do have to become a first-class citizen for all operating systems, meaning, you know, for Microsoft, it's not just about our Windows operating system anymore. It's about Linux. And it's not just about a certain flavor of Linux. It's about all versions of Linux that we should support.
Yeah, the idea of agnosticity, I think I may have just made up a word, is one that I'm hearing more and more about, too, from chief information officers. And it's not exactly open architecture, but it's the same concept, I guess. Am I on track there?
I think you are. I think people have always, you know, it's open equals open source. And I'm not sure that's exactly what we're talking about.
Right, exactly.
Right. I mean, open source is kind of a business model. It's also multiple programming languages and legal specifications. I think what we're talking about now is truly open platforms, meaning that the platforms can support a variety of development tools and operating systems and data formats and platforms.
When we talked about what we were going to chat about before we got on the air, you used the term cloud and mobile, and you tied them. It wasn't one word, but it was one phrase. And I detected when you said it that way that you were doing it intentionally and that they're so closely tied together now that they are almost becoming one word, certainly one concept. Did I catch that correctly, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. When we build applications, we used to think of building applications, you know, I can go back in my historical career here when I went back and I used to develop applications for DOS-based devices, right? And then Windows-based devices, Linux operating systems. And now what we're doing is we're really trying to build applications that can run on any device through a variety of frameworks and that can also access data from a variety of locations. And I think the reason we're doing that is because of the need for the portability across all of those.
And it seems to me that's a logical fit in a government environment because that's more democratic, for lack of a better word. You want to make sure that you're not eliminating a certain percentage of the audience or the citizenry that doesn't have a particular type of device that has decided to choose this operating system over that one, and make sure that, well, we want to be available to everybody. It seems to be a logical fit in the government space.
It is, and I think it's, you know, if I had to give an analogy, I think it's about software-driven everything. Right, software-driven architectures, software-driven application development, which is a given, but software-driven networking, right? Software-driven storage, for example, is now a new trend. And some of these, you know, they're not new concepts. They've been around for years. Software-driven storage or software-defined storage has been used in the cloud by Google, by Microsoft, by Amazon for years. But I think what we're seeing now is that become more mainstream. And be used ubiquitously across all the different platforms and all the major cloud vendors.
I wrote that term down, software-driven everything, and I'm going to steal it. But I'll give you credit every time I use it. The mobile revolution, one mistake I've made as we've talked about mobile in the past several years is that I in my mind, tend to think phones first. And I am reminded periodically by friends of mine in the audience who hear me talk about it like that on the air and saying, don't do that, because don't get stuck in that rut, because mobile is now so much more than just phones. It's not, and it's not just tablets either. It's different kinds of mobile computing.
It's any device.
Yeah,
it's wearables.
It really is.
It's, I mean, the latest and greatest wearables are now coming out for the Christmas season.
Yeah.
Whether it's a Fitbit, now they're the smart watches and Fitbits that allow you to, you know, measure your heartbeat. And it really, I think, comes down to the whole new phenomena of the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a pretty scary concept, I think, to some folks who don't really understand it, because they think, you know, they have this idea that Big Brother is now watching everything you do and recording every move you make and every breath you take. And I don't think, I think what they don't realize is there's actually a lot of benefit, and especially from a citizen perspective.
Well, especially, I imagine it's scary to folks from a security perspective. And I'm not even thinking necessarily about the customer. But, I mean, I've heard you say, and I've heard other people say, that every device is a potential entry point for a bad guy that wants to try to get into a network. And so if you're thinking now about every person not just walking around with one device, or two or three, but maybe five or 10, you know, because you might have a watch and you might have a fitness kind of thing and a phone and a tablet. And pretty soon you are up to five or six potential entry points if the data is not secure. And we'll talk about the data in a minute. And the applications aren't secure. Boy, there are a lot of gateways potentially there.
Absolutely. And I think what we're seeing is now kind of a shift in from a security posture of, it's all about the perimeter and the guards and gates and guns, or I like to use the analogy of a moat kind of around the castle.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're looking down and saying, look, don't invest all your security dollars just in perimeter-based security, because it's inevitable for many, many reasons. I mean, it could be an insider attack. It could be an outsider attack. Could be a, you know, something that just wasn't configured correctly. Those things are going to happen. What you really need to do is focus on what happens if somebody gets inside that perimeter. Right, and assume a breach.
Mm-hmm.
And what if you assume a breach from a security posture perspective, then you can think about it's a whole new paradigm for how you manage the security posture of both the cloud-based operating systems, but also how you manage the devices inside your infrastructure from an enterprise perspective.
And I heard a new term the other day. I don't know if it's widespread or if it's just something this guy made up, but the term that he used was the innocent attacker. And it's the person who very innocently exposes the network to some kind of intrusion, whether they stick a thumb drive in where they shouldn't and it's got something on or whatever. But the intention was not to allow a breach or allow somebody else to perform a breach. It's just somebody made a mistake. Somebody with the best of intentions just made a mistake. And I wonder if we're paying as much attention to those kinds of potential intrusions as we should be.
I think that's a really good point, and I think that goes to the whole perimeter discussion, because now they're inside the perimeter.
Right, that's
and if
right.
you don't have the right protections inside that perimeter to be able to catch those types of attacks, then you'll never know. And that's exactly what's happening. And in a lot of these instances we're seeing in the press today, is that it's some innocent employee who clicks on an email that then installs something that's actually sending data, or, you know, more importantly, things like credit card numbers right, and users' names and addresses to you know, some other country. And I think that what we'll see is now there would be defense mechanisms in place, in more of a defense in depth. You can think of them as kind of concentric circles, so that once that intruder gets in, they'll actually be stopped inside your perimeter without, and not given the ability to get to the data, or actually tricked to believe they have gotten to the data, so that you can be alerted and then locate those aggressors and go after them.
For a long time, the conversation about that revolved around your inner security is only as good as your weakest link. That is, your employee who's been trained least or who's paid attention least. And that always seemed to me to be a kind of a sad way to go about securing your network. What you're talking about doing away with the perimeter and being aware of your surroundings within your own organization sounds to me to make a lot more sense.
Right. It's not just the end user's responsibility. I mean, everybody has a responsibility from a security perspective. I think it's more about now there are technologies that you can put in place to be able to secure right, the inside and look at it from a assumed breach perspective.
What do you expect to see? We're almost into 2015, just a couple of weeks away. As we look back at the end of 2015 and say, what kind of was the state of the year in cloud in 2015? What are the things you think we'll be talking about a year from now?
So clearly we've been focused, especially in the federal government IT arena, on software as a service.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the jumping off point for email collaboration, bringing dial tone to services that information workers need just to do their basic job.
Yep.
That were traditionally extremely expensive, and you could see the business value very quickly. It was a great return on investment and made a lot of sense. And I think now we're seeing, you know, the adoption rate there is very high and growing. And so I expect to see that kind of wrap up in the next couple of years. What we're seeing now is the same thing kind of happen on the infrastructure as a service level, but it's really been focused on public-facing websites and public-facing data, and not so much on the mission-critical types of applications and citizen and applications that are going to drive the business, right, of a particular agency to do things like bidirectional communication with citizens. And
mm-hmm.
So what I'm hoping is that we'll start to see a trend, and it might not be a trend where there's, you know, where every agency takes advantage of a platform as a service type of solution, but we'll start to see a trend where we'll see hybrid applications that span both infrastructure, platform, and software, but also touch the solutions that are living in their firewall and touch mission critical information.
Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful like you are. I'm maybe more skeptical than you are because I don't hear yet about a lot of agencies that are saying, yeah, we've done this in the cloud, so we've moved these applications so far, and we're ready to do these. We have this cohort of legacy systems that are going to be problematic for us, but here's our vision for the next 2 to 5 years about how we want to try to move forward. And I understand part of that's because of the budget foolishness that we've been going through the last 2-3 years. But I still don't know if it's that the leaders don't have enough time to really pull back and think conceptually and do long-term enterprise planning or what the deal is. But I don't hear as much of that I think would be beneficial to that kind of moving forward on a yearly or every 2 years basis, just thinking about what's coming next.
I agree that I think it's going to be challenging
mm-hmm.
for agencies to do this. And I think we're going to see a couple agencies pop to the forefront of this, just like we did with email
sure.
A couple years ago. I think the biggest challenges there to overcome are really embracing a risk-based security posture. We've always, you know, risk-based security is not anything new. FISMA is a risk-based security, framework. Right? We've been employing that risk-based security framework for some time. But we've been doing it very, very rigidly, right? More of a checkbox. And I think as you start to move to the cloud, it is all of a sudden very risk-based.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to look at the cloud in the way the benefits versus the risk, and then not look at it from a perimeter perspective anymore. And I think that's a huge fundamental change, especially for the security folks and the CISOs of the world, to embrace that and be able to say, look, I'm going to extend my perimeter. I'm going to take an assume breach response or assume breach posture to this, and I'm going to allow a hybrid environment to exist where my network is extended to X number of cloud service providers.
You were chatting with Jason Miller before we went on the air, and he reported just this week that the White House is open to passing cybersecurity legislation kind of in a more piecemeal approach rather than the approach that the Senate has been pushing for the last several years, which is we should do this one huge behemoth bill. And one of the issues that it struck me that he reported on that is something that could go right away is that there's a lot of agreement on is the idea of continuous monitoring. And I pointed out to him that 2 years ago, that would have been great when this bill first started. But that idea has now evolved and progressed. And we're not talking about continuous monitoring anymore on a real day-to-day action basis. Maybe still on a policy level, they're still talking about that on the Hill. But we've progressed now to continuous diagnostics and mitigation. Some agencies are already going ahead with it and just saying, this is how we're going to do it because it's the right thing to make sure the networks are secure. And that's my fear is that as Congress tries to get more involved and ease that transition from a compliance environment that we might not wind up with something that's any better in that area than we have right now. Do you, is that a possibility? Is that something that you're looking at?
I think we have a couple of challenges in that area. You know, and they're centered around some policies that have been in place for years. So things like the trusted internet connection,
mm-hmm.
right? The trusted internet connection wasn't really built or created with the cloud in mind.
Right.
And so when you implement, if you implement a trusted internet connection and you do that by the letter of the actual policy, it really isn't, you know, the agencies really can't take advantage of the cloud. And so DHS is taking the lead there to work with the cloud service provider industry to come up with alternatives to what they're currently doing. The same with continuous monitoring. The FedRAMP PMO is doing the same thing to determine with Department of Homeland Security, how do we do continuous monitoring on large cloud providers that are multi-tenant?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we were to ship them the log files, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
Right? It'd be truckloads, dump truckloads mm-hmm. a day. And that's really, and so I think it's really coming up and looking at innovative ways to do what we have done with traditional policies. And a lot of this is baked in. You know, we don't do things the same way we did on-premise in the cloud.
Right.
Everything is defined by software. It is driven by software. It's not driven by hardware. Right? Hardware is the commodity. And if you look at how all the major cloud vendors do things, we actually believe that there are some new innovative practices that can be put in place to accomplish or meet the same risks that those old regulations were trying to mitigate.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Time always flies when I sit down to talk with you, Susie. I appreciate you coming in. Let's go back to, we talked about data analytics a little bit earlier and the potential that agencies can realize by storing their data in the cloud and then accessing and doing their analytics that way. The issue of collecting the data and storing the data, I think everybody's pretty much got that idea down. Being able to ask the questions that you want to ask to inform decision-making is where we're still kind of feeling our way around, is my view. Is that a fair view, do you think?
It is a fair view, and I think the other piece that comes into this is a privacy concern.
Hmm.
Right? Which data can be actually viewed? How do we actually curate that data so that we're not releasing something that might be sensitive
yep.
and that should be, you know, held behind agency firewalls? And I think the two of those together are what's stifling the ability for people to actually go in and look at this data. I think the other thing I would throw into the pot here is that the tools that are out there really require very sophisticated data scientists
mm-hmm.
With PhD degrees in some instances to make sense of all this data and to be able to analyze this data. And the good news there is that I think we're seeing tools that are coming out now that are based on just everyday products that business analysts and data analysts use today. They're in the workforce that will allow them to get access to data that's stored in big data warehouses like Hadoop
mm-hmm.
to be able to go out and make sense of this data, at least at a grassroots level. So I think we're going to start to see the tables turn a little bit based on the data that's already in these data warehouses. And I think we're going to start to see privacy policies evolve over time to map to the cloud and again, to the security posture, the risk-based security posture that we need to see.
I think it's interesting that you're thinking about the people part of that too, because we've talked about the last couple of years, any number of times, the data itself, the analytics tools, all of those kinds of things. And we haven't really talked as much about the fact that data is its own specialty. It's its own special field. Commerce Department's ready to hire a chief data officer. They already have a deputy that's come over from OSTP. And so there are some places that understand this requires a little bit different approach. This requires a different personnel approach than we've taken in the past. You expect to see that continue?
I do.
Accelerate?
I do. I think the idea of a chief data officer, I think, has been needed for quite some time. I think what we'll see, though, is that this chief data officer will be the head poobah, right? The guy that is the data scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they'll be able to hire data analysts to be able to use these tools now, just COTS off-the-shelf tools that they're familiar things like Excel can now give you access to a Hadoop database.
Mm-hmm.
There are many of the tools that are out there by a number of vendors now that are just sitting on analyst data desktops that they'll be able to use to gain access to this information, which is new, and that's only been available for a little while.
And maybe this is an obvious question to folks who do it for a living, but what's the advantage other than cost and accessibility of the applications, are there other advantages to that? Are there results that you'll be able to get that maybe you couldn't get before? Or is it just the fact that instead of having to have some special analytics tool, you're going to be able to use something that just is comes off the shelf or comes out of the cloud?
I mean, of course, it depends on the data set they're looking at. But
yeah.
I think, you know, these tools will, if you understand the context of the data, they'll be able to look at this, apply context to that information, and be able to get valuable information back that may be able to, for example, we're starting to see if you merge this with the Internet of Things and you think about not only just IT sensors that are on devices, but you think about citizens mm-hmm. as sensors and their ability to actually feed information back to you.
And willingness to do
and
it.
Willingness
I mean, they want to
do so
help.
In a natural disaster. Right? Or heaven forbid, an unnatural disaster, where you could quickly and easily through mobile technologies get information back from citizens on a real-time basis, mm-hmm. put this into a data warehouse and marry that with other information that's being collected from sensors, you could all of a sudden get a pretty accurate picture of what's actually going on to be able to deploy the right resources to the right locations.
It's pretty amazing stuff, Susie. I always enjoy talking about these issues with you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.